Welcome to the Healthcare Advocacy Podcast. On this podcast, you'll hear stories to encourage, inspire, and empower you to be the best healthcare advocate that you can be for yourself or for a loved one. The information provided in this podcast is not to be used for any medical advice. This is for information only and to support you in your journey. Please consult with your physician and medical team. In fact, share your favorite episode with your team and ask questions from that.
Welcome to the Healthcare Advocacy Podcast. Today, I'd like to welcome Irene Diamond, and she is the director of a pain relief clinic in San Francisco. She's calls herself a pain reliever and mover improver. Welcome, Irene.
Thanks, Christina. Thrilled to be here.
Excellent. We're very, very happy to hear you, to have you tonight and discuss what you would like to talk about for healthcare advocacy. Before we do that, why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself and who you are and what you do?
Well, I have three parts to my empire. I like to focus on helping not only the consumer of pain relief therapy and movement therapy, but also therapists who provide the therapy for the patients and clients. So I do that through San Francisco's very first wellness center that I started about 23 years ago. It's Diamond Pain Relief and Wellness. And we were one of the very first multi-practitioner, modality clinics where we had a whole bunch of different specialists under one roof. And at that time, it wasn't really common at all, except for in a hospital setting. So I started that. We're still in the same location now over the last 23 years. And I'm also practicing. I do a method that I actually developed called active myofascial therapy, the Diamond Method. And it all came about because when I was 15 years old, I used to be a gymnast or an acrobat. And I was doing some acrobatics and I ended up getting injured and I had a spinal cord injury and actually broke my neck, which is of course what all the parents say, don't do that, you're gonna break your neck. And I went and did it and fractured C5 and 6 and actually at the time was paralyzed from my neck down and spent 2 months in the hospital flat on my back in traction. And then had surgery. So I had a spinal fusion and a laminectomy and then had to rehab myself because this was a long time ago and physical therapy at that point was completely different than it is now. They said, I was young, you know, you're 15 years old, you're strong, you'll be fine. See you later. And I had one PT session and they sent me out the door with a Philadelphia collar. And I had to learn how to rehab myself. So fast forward, went to college, obviously got my movement back and got my degree in rehabilitation therapy with a focus on movement and dance. And I thought I wanted to work with kids and use movement as therapy. And I ended up taking what I needed for my own pain relief on my neck and turned that into a method, which is now the Diamond Method. And so I based the method on the science that I learned in my 4-year college. And then of course it's evolving and changing. And now with neuroscience and our new understandings, or I guess I should say our current understandings of pain science, you know, the method is changing and it's not just mechanical. Let's push on people and change their tissue structure and give them a few corrective exercises. Now, of course, we know that part of why it was so effective, even though I didn't understand why it was so effective, was because we use a lot of conversation and we use a lot of self-efficacy where the patient or the client is in complete control because they're an active participant in the therapy. They're not just passive on the table. You know, the therapist is not doing something to them. We're doing it together. And now we know why that is so so important to incorporate. So that's my story. You know, and then I've taken the lessons that I've learned in my own wellness center and how we've grown the practice and how I've been able to keep our doors open for so long. And now I teach that to other healthcare providers across our country and North America and a couple other countries around the world. It's been really fun, and I enjoy sharing my knowledge and my expertise, you know, not only with my own patients and clients, but with other healthcare providers.
That is wonderful. That whole story, from your personal story through the progression of developing a whole method, it sounds like, obviously, like you said, you had a lot of the science in school, but then definitely a lot of intuition and just kind of sensing what was right, I would imagine came.
Well, I knew what was working for me. I needed somebody to push and have me turn my head or have me move my shoulder to be able to get that relief. Mm-hmm. I had no idea why it was working, but that's what I needed personally. So then when I asked my therapist who was working on me as a teenager, and I said, can you just hold that spot and let me turn my head or let me move my shoulder? And they let me do that. And I started instantly getting relief. They took that method. This was one therapist, and he took it and he tried it with his clients at the time. Came back to say, Irene, this is amazing. It really is working. I don't know why it's working. So that was the little, you know, the little kernel that started it. And then over the years, just developed into a method now that I license to other practitioners and other clinics so they can also use it.
Oh, that's fantastic. That I think that's really, you know, where we need to be going. And the fact that you were so ahead of your time to understand the importance of taking all the different, treatment practitioners and putting them in one facility or one clinic, so smart to do. And obviously you're doing well with it. So it was the right thing.
Running a business in any city is challenging, and San Francisco is one of the worst.
Well, congratulations for you for having such success and for sticking with what you felt was important as a message to get out to patients.
Thank you, Christine.
Of course. So specifically then, what healthcare experience or topic did you want to address tonight?
Well, a couple different things that I think is really important, and it's how we actually run our wellness center as well. It's a concept that came about 5 years ago, and it was based on the fact that we were in what I would now call an open to the public practice, an open to the public wellness center. We'd take walk-ins, we'd pick up the phone, somebody would say, hey, can I get an appointment at 4 o'clock? We'd book them in at 4 o'clock. Of course, we'd ask questions about what their goals were, or, you know, what they were looking for, but we didn't do any pre-screening. Our model, our business model, was based on volume. Just bring in as many people as we can, get them results, of course, but it was, we'll take anybody and everybody. We did have a focus. We had a niche, which was mostly car accidents, neck and back pain, and migraines. So it wasn't like we were being a generalist and seeing every single orthopedic condition and neuro and pediatrics and all of that. No, we did focus, but we still were open to the public. What I started to realize is there's a value to what I call the precise private practice. Precise private practice. So what that means is, in a precise private practice, practitioners take or accept into their practice only the patients and clients who they know or feel confident that they can help. So it's scary because that means you turn people away if you don't know that you can, if you're not sure. I think it's unethical to say, come on in, let's give it a try, or just book them anyway, even though you've never worked on somebody with that condition or that symptom or that goal. Mm-hmm. And so it puts us as practitioners who operate precise private practices in a very important role, which is, we have to put our money where our mouth is, because along with a precise private practice comes, and this is unheard of, I think, I don't know any other practice that does it, aside from people who coach with me, where we offer a guarantee. So the people who we see have often been through the mill. They've been to many practitioners. They've tried lotions and potions and, you know, this method and that method, and they're exhausted. They've spent thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. They've wasted hours and hours and hours of their time. And the worst thing is hope, right? If they come to a new practitioner and they think, okay, this is going to work for me, and then they're disappointed, that's horrible. So for us to be able to say, yes, Christine, I hear what you're saying. I understand your situation. I understand your goals. I believe that I can help you not get 100% pain-free. I'm not promising that. Or not get, complete symptom relief. Or not, whatever those things are. I'm not guaranteeing that, because that would be silly, because I'm not, I don't have a crystal ball and everybody is different. But what I can guarantee is that you, Christine, as my client, my patient, will feel that your time and your money is worth it, is well spent. That I can guarantee.
Okay.
And so I'm putting my money where my mouth is, basically, right? Which is, again, unheard of. But I believe that if more practitioners did that, if more clinics did that and only accepted in clients who they know for sure they can help, they'll get these people symptom relief or improved outcomes with that patient not having a risk.
Yeah, I think that that's true. I think that, you know, as a therapist, just taking that more seriously of how we can help our patients, and if we identify a knowledge deficit or an area that you're not comfortable with, but you really want to be in that space, well, then that is going to require additional training, and you better be able to provide some, it's not just, I don't know. I think everybody should be having this thought, and you just are actually taking action to put it out there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an unusual position, because a lot of practitioners, when they hear this concept of offering a guarantee or being super selective in who they bring into their practice, they it makes them nervous because it really is a bold statement. But the flip of that is you end up with people who you really love and who you feel comfortable working with, because again, you've got that expertise. Now, I've had people who come to me with situations or conditions that I've not been familiar with, or I've not had any experience with. And I'm, and if I still think I have the ability to help them, I'll just be straight out and I'll say, I've never worked with somebody who has ABC condition. I can do research and I can see if in fact you're a candidate for being accepted into my practice. And if I accept them in, again, I'm still not giving them a guarantee that I'll get them 100%, but I'm giving them a guarantee that I will do my best, so they therefore feel it's worth their time and their money.
No, I think that's important. I think it's great for you as a provider to make that bold statement. And for those therapists or practitioners who aren't, ready to say that, maybe it's because they're not confident in their own skills, but I think that's wonderful, and it's worked out for you. Then in the past 5 years, you've enjoyed this change.
I will never go back. And there's only one person that I ended up refunding who came to me with the neck pain, chronic neck pain I don't remember the details. It was like a year of neck pain. Sounded pretty sort of garden variety, and I thought for sure I can help him. And he got a little bit of improvement by session three, and he had signed up for, I have a special program that he had signed up for. So by session three, he wasn't progressing as I thought he should, based on my experience and training. And so therefore I suggested he go back and see his healthcare provider. Well, it turned out he did an MRI and he had a tumor in his neck. There's no way I could have seen that. Of course, it wasn't going to be something I could help him with. So he was the only person so far that I've ever had to refund.
And how many patients do you think that one person out of how many?
Oh, gosh. I could not even tell you.
Well,
I'd have to do the math. I'd have to grab my calculator.
No problem. But that's great then. That's wonderful that you're able to make that statement and deliver on your guarantee with the patients that you're serving. So I guess, you know, maybe what would you say to a patient who is going through with a different provider who isn't happy with the way things are going? What kind of conversation could a patient have to guide them to a better place?
Yeah, well, you know, my specialty is orthopedic musculoskeletal pain and conditions like that. So I would say if somebody has that sort of goal, to get either out of pain, more function, more movement, more productive at work, all that kind of stuff, if they aren't seeing remarkable, you know, results, if they aren't seeing marked improvement within the first session or two, to me, that's a red flag. I do not believe that people need to go 3 times, 5 times, 10 times before they start seeing results, no matter if it's physical therapy, chiropractic, acupuncture, massage therapy, whatever. They should start seeing results right away. Mm-hmm. To know that it's the right intervention, the right treatment. So if they're not seeing it, that's a conversation to go back to the provider and say, okay, so why am I not seeing any change? Mm-hmm. If they're not seeing change, it's either the assessment or the evaluation was incorrect, the intervention's incorrect, or that practitioner is not the right practitioner, they're not effective. So somewhere along the way, those three things, one of them or all three are missing.
I would agree with that for sure. And being able to be open and feel comfortable as a patient to talk with your clinician or your healthcare provider about those concerns is a big first step. We should definitely encourage our patients to be communicating that way with us and from a provider side, but absolutely from a patient side, that's good to hear. And to let our audience know that we should be having some significant changes, improvements within those first few sessions.
Absolutely. Again, you know, I suppose times are changing, but we as patients used to think, you know, the therapists, the doctors, the healthcare providers were all knowing, and we deferred to them. And now, of course, we recognize, okay, as healthcare providers, we aren't all knowing and we don't know everything. And we still, though, have knowledge and expertise that is our duty to share with our clients and our patients. And with that being said, it's still up to the client to be an active participant and be knowledgeable and do research. And yes, sure, go on Google and you know, plug away and recognize some of what you're reading is going to be accurate and some of what you're reading is going to be completely fake news, but bring that conversation back to your healthcare provider so you aren't passively accepting everything they're saying. You can play a role in your treatment. And I think that is really an important thing. You have to be the squeaky wheel, and then you can get your needs met better.
Agreed. And I do encourage my patients to do their own research on Google and then let's come back and talk about what you found. Or I had a mother this morning ask me what I thought about a particular device for her son. And you know, I gave them my honest opinion, you know, because it very well may work for him, but here's all the other things that aren't going to work. So I guess, you know, what are your goals as the patient, and then the therapist or the healthcare provider can talk about, you know, kind of our plan or what we're seeing, but we have to be on the same page or this isn't going to work. People aren't going to have their needs met for sure. That's great that you've been able to, well, I have no, it's not surprised that you are so successful with what you do and the way you run your business, because you are making these bold statements and you're delivering on these statements. And I'm sure that all of your clients are quite thankful for how candid you are about what you can or can't do for them. And just that honesty, I think, is valued.
Well, the truth is, I've been in practice now for 30 years. I really don't need the money. And that sound, you know, hopefully that doesn't sound egotistical or arrogant. So I do only want to take people who I know I can help. It's not, it wouldn't feel right to me to just take people's money and, you know, and not get them what they're needing. So I turn people away, I refer them out, or I, you know, give them a solution that doesn't even require me or money or anything. And, you know, and then they're happy. And it actually comes back multiple ways, because then they, of course, refer their people to me, and or they'll go and talk about me to their healthcare provider. So it ends up being the smartest thing from a business standpoint, as well as from an ethical standpoint.
Right. And I think just kind of thinking about, there's so much of the scarcity model out there that we need to keep it all for ourselves. And I've never sat right with me. And I think what you're doing is quite the opposite. Like, you know, you have your specialty and you understand that you can't help everybody under the sun. But then there are other people who can be of service. So I think that's a really, and of course you are in a place that you can financially do that right now too. But even somebody who can't, I think, it's important to, we want to help everybody, but we don't have to help everybody the same way. And just to be able to understand that there are multiple ways to help, and to provide your services.
That's right. And with a great referring network, I have colleagues who I can refer to confidently. So that patient is still going to get helped.
Right. Absolutely. That's great. Mm-hmm. So what do you think needs to change overall in our healthcare system right now?
Well, as you know, that's a pretty crazy question. Can't really be answered so easily.
No.
You know, again, I see it from two sides. I teach practitioners how to increase their fees, how to make more money, how to get paid what they're worth, all that good stuff. And I recognize that healthcare should not be a privilege. Mm-hmm. And it should be available to people no matter what their financial situation is. I'll give you an example. I got very, very ill when I was traveling last summer. Ended up in Croatia. I was in the hospital for 7 days. I had CAT scans and MRIs and, you know, all these tests, 7 days, my bill, $450. And that's because I was a tourist, because if I was a resident, it would have been less. Mm-hmm. The care was top notch. The paint was peeling. My blankets had holes in them. Who cares? I'm here, right? They saved my life. So what is that? That would be one MRI in this country. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's definitely an imbalance of what can be delivered and at what cost. Mm-hmm. I like the model of HMOs, where you save money by keeping people healthy and well. Mm-hmm. One of the programs I have that I do as a clinician is, it's called my results program. So it's a flat rate, and that the patients pay that rate regardless if they see me 3 times a week or once a week or whatever we decide we need. Mm-hmm. So in an HMO situation, that's how it is. You pay your monthly premiums, and then, you know, everything else should be covered, and it's in the best interest of the healthcare provider to keep us healthy. Mm-hmm. And therefore they save money in the long run, as opposed to paying for each procedure. Then of course there's a motive there for the healthcare provider to do as many procedures or treatments or whatever, because they're going to make more money.
Right. So that's absolutely right. I mean, we are a consumer driven society, and yet if we think about that from a healthcare perspective, then that would mean we need people to be sick to have to provide care. But I think, like you're saying, that is completely on its backwards in thinking, why would we want people to be sick? Mm-hmm. So to have a different model that actually rewards and supports being well, and I think obviously things happen, injuries happen, people need surgeries, but from a chronic disease standpoint, I want to incentivize patients and the community to take responsibility for themselves. And I think that's kind of part of the answer is
right. Yeah. And we know, everyone knows there are basic things we can do to keep our populations healthier. Simple things: wash your hands, exercise, eat well, drink more water, don't smoke, right? Like, it doesn't cost anything. People have to do that. Mm-hmm. And if that means we have to reward them somehow by giving them money back or giving them something, mm-hmm. then that would be a better use of our money than paying for, you know, cardiac surgery.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. For sure. And just even the loss of function and the loss of quality of life. I mean, I don't know, well, it's a whole big topic, but we're definitely much more reactive, mm-hmm. and we've got great, you know, surgical interventions and wonderful medicines. But like you said, all of the things that we really need to keep a majority of these chronic illnesses and diseases at bay or not even existing do not cost money, and the fraction of what it costs for these medications and procedures and then all the rest of it. So that's
and I think, you know, like corporations, organizations, they are getting smart because now they are having wellness programs in their offices,
right?
And they do reward their employees for staying healthy,
right?
And why do they do it? Not because they're nice, but because they see the bottom line. The bottom line is it saves them in work comp injuries. It saves them in lost productivity and lost time on the job and all of that. Mm-hmm. So it ends up saving them money when they reward their employees to stay healthy.
Right. No, mm-hmm. absolutely. I hope that starts to even grow more. I mean, definitely hospital systems and insurance systems are starting to become more involved, as far whether it's Silver Sneakers or other organizations paying for gym measure memberships. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then I think the nutrition piece of it too is, I don't know necessarily the solution, but I think that nutrition piece is as important as movement and exercise. And I don't really see a lot being supported there from, I feel like a lot of doctors, like they'll put up the signs on the wall of what you're going to eat, but I don't know, maybe take the standpoint more of, I don't want to advise you on those lifestyle choices, or I don't want to tell you what to eat. But I don't agree with that. I think that I don't know. We have to have that value, that shared value that's important for them to do, because, you know, just having the knowledge isn't going to get it there.
Hey there, it's Christine from the Healthcare Advocacy Podcast. Would you like to be featured on this podcast and share your healthcare advocacy story? Then sign up on the Sign Up Genius link under the description of this podcast, and we'll talk soon.